This time on Geek Pod Blue.
Knights of Templar. Why did it have to be Knights of Templar?
Warning, station is now code blue.
Yes!
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Geek Pod Blue. I am your host, Hugh, and I have not disappeared into a mysterious portal underneath a German mountain. At least I haven't yet. Although that does bring us to the subject of our show this week. Now, you guys remember a while back I did a little story on the Pied Piper of Hamelin and the legends and potentially true stories that lie behind it. I found another interesting tidbit while surfing the dark underbelly of the internet this week. And, while it's only peripherally connected to this, this particular mountain we're going to talk about, there are some rumors that might be where the Pied Piper took all of those children. There are certainly enough mysteries surrounding Untersberg that it can stand on its own. Now, you're going to have to bear with me because there was a lot of research involved in this. I'm going to be a lot of mouse clicks as I click back and forth to make sure that I cover all of the things that we need to talk about today. So, first of all, the Untersberg Mountain. This is a mountain in Germany. It's located between something called the, and I'm going to butcher this, I'm sure, the Berchtesgaden Alps, which are on the border between Berchtesgaden, Germany, and Salzburg, Austria. And it's something called a tabletop mountain. Now, Untersberg translates directly to Under Mountain, and this is something you've probably seen. It's a big lopsided mountain, and it was featured in The Sound of Music, I believe, in that scene where that lady was dancing all around. Yes, I've never watched The Sound of Music. You see that mountain in the background, so it's a very well-known mountain range. What a lot of people don't know is that it has a very, very dark history. Now, there are a ton of legends associated with this. You know, first of all, saying that it's the resting place of the Holy Roman Emperor Frederick Barbarossa. Now, it is said that he is sleeping there, waiting to be resurrected, and that that will herald the end of the world. Now, there are several different legends about this, that somebody needs to find him and grab his scepter, that ravens have to fly around the mountain three times or something. I mean, it probably silly stuff. But certainly, you know, this mountain range has had legends associated with it as far back as the 1100s. Now, there are tons and tons of cave systems there, and we're going to talk about those in a second. But there are plenty of people who have had, interests in this particular mountain range, because there are legends of, you know, some people say there are trolls living in the mountains. Some people say there's a mysterious group of beautiful women who will kidnap men if they travel on the mountain. But what we do know is there have been lots of disappearances. Now, some people say it's, you know, UFO activity. Other people say it's supernatural activity. But whatever activity it was, it certainly caught the eye of one of the most famous people in history, and that would be Adolf Hitler. Hitler was fascinated by this mountain, and he thought that it held some kind of unnatural power. Now, it's well documented that the Nazi regime started investigating the occult during World War II, thinking it might be something they could use against the Allies. And one would assume that this probably is tied into that. Now, Hitler actually had a mountain retreat built on a nearby mountain in order for him to be able to view this place. Like, he had a telescope set up specifically just for watching this mountain. You know, it wasn't for looking at the stars or anything like that. Now, a little bit of research. Apparently, this was called the Eagle's Nest. It was also called the Tea House, or, and again, German word, Kelsteinhaus. Now, it's on the top of Kelstein, which is a nearby mountain, and it has a pretty unobstructed view of the mountain. Now, Hitler only visited there a few times. He only managed to make it there about five times before his death. But it was spared destruction at the end of World War II. There's a group of people called the German Alpine Club, which still use it as a mountain restaurant, which I thought was pretty interesting. So it's fascinating, you know, at the very least Hitler felt that this place had some kind of power. Now, going back to the legends around it, there is a legend of a farmer who disappeared and vanished. He was not a farmer. He was a hunter. And apparently, a year later, he showed up to his own funeral with no memory of what had happened the past year. Now, interestingly enough, I found that there has actually been some research that was done on this. Now, this hunter that went missing. His name was Michael Holzhauger. And basically, it was recorded in the Farmer's Almanac from that year. It was recorded in the Almanac of 1738. Basically, he was summoned by the Archbishop of Salzburg and would only tell his story to the Archbishop. Now, we don't know exactly what his story was because he died shortly thereafter, but I find it interesting that this is one legend that we actually have some backup information for. There's another legend talking about a wedding party who disappeared and then reappeared 100 years later. This story was related by a Lazarus Gitschner. But I was not able to find any further information about that in great detail, at the very least. Now, what I find to be one of the most fascinating stories about this is something a little more recent, okay? In August of 1987, three people entered the mountain to explore several caves, and they did not come back. The police looked for them. They found their car parked at a parking place nearby, but they could find no sign of them. They did an extensive search of the area and all of the caves that they could search, at least, and they found nothing. So it was assumed that they were dead. Oddly enough, 3 months later, they called their relatives from a ship in the Red Sea that was heading to Alexandria, Egypt. They had no idea how they got there. They had no idea how much time had passed or what exactly had happened. They just suddenly appeared on the ship. Pretty bizarre stuff. Now, they went to the consulate in Alexandria and returned home, but certainly that is, you know, a more recent story that we can, you know, certainly point to. In this day and age, I would think that people disappearing for 3 months and popping up somewhere, you'd think there'd be more about that out there. I wonder if, since this is just before the advent of the internet really being a big thing, if some of that information might be forgotten. And I will be looking for documentaries and such to try to back up some of these stories. I certainly don't claim them to be real, but I do find them fascinating. But this certainly is not the only foray into this mountain in recent memory. Now, in August of 2008, some explorers decided to try to explore the gigantic cave system that is under Untersberg. And they went down as far as they could. They knew that its lowest point had not been reached yet, so they wanted to see how far they could go. They did this exploration. They went down 1,056 meters before having to turn around because they couldn't go any farther. They found an abyss-like ledge, and it went down even much farther. They weren't able to go any farther, and so there's certainly a lot of this cave system that is not explored. During this investigation, they also found 800 new passageways and a lake at 930 meters. They had to cross it with a rubber boat, oddly enough, if you can believe that. There was actually a giant underground lake inside this mountain. Certainly, there has to be a ton of stuff down there that we haven't explored. Now, going back to some of the legends, there are people that claim to have explored the caves and found one cave where there were soldiers from World War I who thought that the war was still going on. Of course, that's probably a little far-fetched, but certainly with something that's that unexplored with that many legends and mysteries about it, you have to wonder. Now, hundreds of people have gone missing in the area. So many that the German and Austrian newspapers regularly carry stories on this. This is something that's known in that area and in those countries, that if you go there, there's a good chance you're probably going to disappear. Now, sometimes these people vanish and are never seen again. Sometimes they show up months, days, or years later in a completely different part of the world or the country with no idea how long they've been gone. Certainly lends some credence to the whole time anomaly concept. Now, there are other rumors that, you know, tie the Templars to this and ancient Egyptian gods and goddesses and things like that. There are with all things. You know, whenever there's some kind of creepy legend, people try to shoehorn a bunch of different legends into it. I mean, I think the Templars have been tied to just about everything out there. You know, if you can think of something, you know, somebody thinks it was the Templars. I certainly, I think it can sometimes muddy the investigation of these kind of things because there's always these crazy legends. But still, it certainly makes it fun to talk about and fun to, you know, pose conjecture about. Now, I'm not so sure that if I ever made a trip to Germany that I would actually visit this cave system. Normally, I'm pretty brave about this kind of stuff. But I found enough stories about this that I don't know if I'd want to be one of those people lost there. There's certainly enough real dangers there. You know, miles and miles of caves and ice caves even, and the giant lake and, you know, precipices and stuff. I mean, there's just too much danger in there. I mean, I certainly would not want to go and explore this cave, you know, more than maybe just the very opening, as long as it was safe. But I think that it's something that does deserve a little more looking into. I'm going to search the internet to see what I can find. Somebody has to have done a documentary on this. And maybe if people keep searching, they will find those long-lost children of Hamelin. Who knows? I'd be interested to see what you guys think, or if you know of any other areas like this. The thing that really gets me is the people disappearing and then showing up 3 months later. I find that fascinating. That's something that can somewhat be measured because most of those people are probably still alive. And I certainly hope somebody has done that research. And if I can find something or you guys find something, please let me know. And I will certainly let you know. Now, I think we're going to move on to some news for your ears. And so, there's a lot of interesting news this week. First up, the return of the comic book Hack Slash. Hack Slash Resurrection was released yesterday, and I personally am very excited about this. This is written by the creator Tim Seeley, and the last version of the series ended in 2012, and there have been a few special comics since then, but there hasn't been a full series. Now, if you're not familiar with Hack Slash, let me give you some background. Basically, it takes all the familiar horror movie tropes, you know, and kind of turns them on their ear while not turning them on their ear. Basically, you have the main character who is Cassie Hack, and think of her as the final girl who got really good at being a final girl. Now, she, after being attacked by a serial killer, she decides she is going to go on the attack and take out serial killers. Her and this, and I forget if Slash is kind of like some creature himself, but he does have a mask on. He's very Jason Voorhees. But the two of them track down what they call revenants. Now, they're not just regular run-of-the-mill serial killers. Some of these are ghostly, supernatural monstrosities. And to go along with that, there have been some famous monsters they faced off against. They faced they faced Chucky. They faced Victor Crowley from the Hatchet movies. They've also taken on Herbert West from The Reanimator, and a few others, I believe. So it's kind of like, you know, the person who hunts the bad guys in horror movies. And it was a fantastic series. They did two volumes, a bunch of one-shots. And it's now returning for another run. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. I will certainly be doing that soon. But if you haven't read Hack Slash before, it's all available in omnibuses and trade paperbacks. And it's a great read. It's just one of those comic books that's kind of gross, kind of violent, and just a lot of fun. Next up, Vincent D'Onofrio is returning for Daredevil Season 3. Now, we kind of figured this, considering that the end of Daredevil Season 2 kind of set them up for a very specific comic storyline, so Kingpin would really need to be a part of that, but this is officially confirmed now. He's going to be back, and he is going to be reprising the role of Kingpin. I'm just wondering if we're going to get to see him dressed in some of the other garb he has worn throughout his comic book tenure. Next, hold on, I am getting a text message. And let's see what Paul has to say today. It says, peppermint schnapps and orange juice? Are you kidding? That's disgusting. Are you on drugs? End of text message. That was my favorite mixed drink, in high school is when I discovered that, and I still kind of think orange juice and mint goes together. I know it's a little weird, but I really do. Got another one. Says, so I take the summer off to play football and work on my angry face, and you start doing drugs. I can't believe you. Dude, I swear, it was only that once. It was just Pepto. It's not like it was hard. And it was just to take the edge off. Some tacos. I'm sorry. Some people have all the nerve. Anyway, back to the news. The Walking Dead returned this week, and it returned to a very, I don't want to say climactic, what's the word I'm looking for? Historic 100th episode. The episode itself was pretty good. That's why I didn't want to say climactic. They're building up everything they need to do for this year's all-out war storyline, and I certainly think they did a good job. It was just exciting enough, maybe a little less exciting than you'd expect a season premiere to be, but certainly an excellent, excellent episode. Although I think the bigger deal was the after show, The Talking Dead, or Talking Dead, I'm sorry. Talking Dead was celebrating with a two-hour show that was live from the Greek Theater and had pretty much the entire cast there, even former cast members. T-Dog was there, for crying out loud. I'm pretty sure the only person that wasn't up on stage was David Morrissey. Yeah, everybody was there, even Merle. So if you have a chance to, if you're a Walking Dead fan, and you have a chance to check out The Walking Dead, even if you don't usually watch it, this would be a good one to watch because it was a lot of fun. I certainly think that it looked like the cast, most of them at least, were having a blast, and it's pretty cool to celebrate something like 100 episodes. And Robert Kirkman there on stage said, well, I kind of feel like we're just getting started. Next up, Konami and China's Starlight Media are teaming up to bring us a movie and TV series based on the old video game Contra. Now, if you remember Contra, back in the Nintendo Entertainment System days, it was a side-scroller. You had two little army guys. One was like had blue-colored pants, the other had pink-colored pants, and you're basically fighting aliens. Apparently, and I did not know this, but the Chinese version and the American versions of the game had very different storylines. They are going to be sort of mashing those storylines up for the movie and the TV show. Now, there are no details currently on exactly which is going to dovetail into the other or if they're not going to be connected at all, but it is being made for worldwide distribution, so I am expecting that we will at least get a dubbed version over here. Next up, and this is in some scary news, Regal Cinemas is raising their ticket prices. Now, follow me on this, because they are doing an experiment, as they call it. Because revenues have fallen in the past year, what they're going to start doing in select markets is raising the prices of tickets on very highly in-demand movies for peak viewing times. So we're talking, if you want to see Star Wars The Last Jedi on the night it comes out, if you want to see it on Friday or Saturday or Sunday on the weekend, you're going to pay more for your ticket than I would if I go to see it Wednesday afternoon. They're also saying that they will be lowering some ticket prices, so if a movie isn't doing really well, they're going to lower the price, maybe to get people that are on the fence about it to come in and watch the movie. Now, that does make sense, especially if a movie isn't doing well, but I don't know how I feel. I mean, because people, okay, if I don't want to go see this movie because it's got bad reviews, I'm not going to go see it, whether the ticket's, you know, $15, $11, or $8. I'm just not going to go see it because, you know, I have it in my head that it's not a good movie, all right? Maybe if you drop the ticket price to $5, I'll kick it around, but right now, I don't know how to say this, that they would not lose money if they did that, because there are people who aren't going to see that movie right now. If they raise prices on very popular movies, it's entirely possible that there will be people that will wait for it to come out on video, or God forbid, hit the internet and find it that way. I think Regal is forgetting that movie prices have already skyrocketed in the last few years, and some of us have families, so, you know, taking, if I want to go see Avengers 4, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. 4 of them now are old enough to be considered adults. So I'm going to spend as much as I would taking the entire family out to, you know, Red Robin for dinner. And when you do movies, generally you do dinner. So now we're talking about $130 for a trip out. I don't know about you, but I don't have $130 to spend on stuff like that. So this is going to limit my already limited movie going habits even more. I certainly think that when they put this in place, if you're in a market where they do this, send a very clear message and wait till Wednesday to go see those movies. Show them that, you know, this isn't going to work, because if it does work and they continue raking in the billions on those big nights, then this is just going to open the floodgates for them to raise the prices even more. Finally, in a good news coming out of a bad news kind of situation, There's the whole drama in the news with the Weinstein Company right now, and we're not going to talk about that, but we are going to talk about the pros of the Weinstein Company going bankrupt. Now, there are talks of a buyout, and still the properties and stuff may end up going to the wind. Some of the big news is some franchises may end up being loosed from their contractual obligations. There's a ton of them, but two specifically, and you may not know this, but there is an entire Children of the Corn movie and an entire Hellraiser movie, all filmed and just sitting in a can somewhere. They haven't been released because they were just made to hold on to the rights, because most movie rights go, you have to make a movie every few years to hold the rights. That's what they did. Now, I think it's pretty sad that, I mean, they could have released these on, you know, straight to DVD or video on demand or something like that, but nobody's doing anything with them. So I think it would be pretty cool to see Hellraiser get back in the hands of people that really care about it, especially, God, if Clive Barker was able to get a hold of Hellraiser, that would blow my mind. You know, it hasn't been as good since he was in the director's chair, and I would love for him to get another shot at showing us what the Cenobites world is like. But hey, that's just my opinion. Your mileage may vary. And it's time for the Geek Pod Blue Mailbox. Our first person writing in this week is Mike Fitzgerald. How are you doing, Mike? He says, greetings and salutations. As that you are a fan of Doctor Who, consider the companions and answer, in your opinion, who is your favorite, who is the best, as in most effective, i.e. who is most helpful and least of liability, and who is the most underrated? Well, Mike, I think I've answered something similar to this before from Al Sedano, but let me try to look at this through this lens. As in, who was the best, as in most effective, I would have to say Romana. She was the most equal with the Doctor, and she was able to handle pretty much anything that he could do, and she certainly was not a liability at all. Who was the most underrated? That's a tough one. Yeah, I almost want to say Harry, but no, he was just awful. He wasn't underrated. Man, I don't know. Can we go with Adric? No, that's awful too. Super awful. Who did the seventh? I'm trying to think of who they all traveled with. I don't know. I'd have to think about it when I'm not timed and recording on something. I can say that I think I've said it in the past, my favorite was Charlotte Pollard from the audios. I think most of them have been fantastic. There have not been very many that I didn't like. Actually, you know what? Maybe Leela was the most underrated because, you know, she was always treated like she was a savage, but, you know, half the time she ended up being right when the Doctor was wrong. So I'd have to say, and maybe Leela would be a good vote for the most underrated. Thank you very much for your letter, Mike. We're going to move on to Al Sedano. I have not heard from you in a few weeks. Al, I'm glad to see you writing in. He says, Hugh, in this hypothetical situation, you have just been made editor-in-chief of a comic company and are able to get the license for whatever property you want. It does not matter if somebody already has the license or no one ever has. My question is, what property would you like to do a comic adaptation or continuation of, and what creative team would you put on it? You are also able to get whatever living creators you want. Al. Thank you, Al. That is a fantastic question, and I probably have that answer, and I bet Mike can probably guess what it is. I would choose Hellraiser. Now, if you've read the Hellraiser comics, both the original ones that first came out when they were doing the stock cover versions of the Books of Blood, or if we're talking about the more recent series from Boom Studios, they've all been fantastic. But Boom Studios had some great ideas. What they did is they took the idea of Hellraiser and said, okay, we have an unlimited budget now, so we're going to do this on a grand scale. But they also showed us a lot of what went behind the scenes with the Cenobites and in Hell and things like that. The problem is I think they took it a little too big budget. It was too big. It was too public. It was, you know, worldwide even in the story. Now, it wasn't a bad story by any means, but I would like to see something more along the lines of what you're likely to see adapted in a Hellraiser movie handled by good creators. A more personal, intimate exploration of the Cenobites, their interactions, and, you know, what it's like to their day-to-day life. You know, are they just sitting around waiting for someone to open a box? I think not. There are politics in Hell. There's lots of interesting stuff there, and you could certainly have some grand stories that aren't in the public eye. You know, it was a little strange in the comic when, you know, people were using their cameras to film attacks happening in other countries and putting it on social media. You know, Hellraiser's never been something that that kind of fits that mold. It's almost like a secret that only a few know about. You know, not everyone's aware of what the Lament configuration is. I would personally love to be involved with something like that. I actually have most of both collections, the original run and the new run. I also collected Clive Barker's Nightbreed comics as well. So I'm a big Clive Barker fan, and that's my number one off the top of my head. That's my pick. As far as who I would put on it, that's tough. I honestly don't have an answer for that. If we're talking about current, right? I mean, the one person you want to pull in is Clive Barker, always. And anybody else I would pull in is probably dead. We could have our buddies. We could have Sal Otero work on it or something like that. I don't know. And part of that is because, you know, Paul's the one who really knows the artists and the writer. Well, at least the artist. He's good with the artist. I am horrible with that. I mean, if I read three comics this week and you could ask me who drew it, I probably couldn't tell you. I can usually tell you who wrote it, but not who drew it. I'm a big fan of Scott Snyder, but if I was going to do Hellraiser, I'd probably want to write it myself. Or at least, you know, beg Clive to do it for me. Thank you, Al. That was an awesome question. I hope my answer suffices. Finally, we have a letter from Webcam Nick. Nick writes in and says, Kevin Smith should definitely direct an episode of Arrow. I agree with you, Nick. Says, have you seen the Runaways trailer for their Hulu show? And if so, what do you think? I did see that trailer. I wasn't impressed. Maybe it's going to be a really good show, but none of it didn't scream watch me. After watching that, I have no desire to watch the show. Maybe that's because I've got so many other superhero-themed shows on my docket, but I'm just not feeling it. I don't know. I still might give it a try, though. He says, and if you can make a superhero show that's not being made, what would you bring to life? Seriously? Everybody's asking me what I would do. What would Hugh do? We should get like little bracelets and things like that made out of paracord that say, what would Hugh do on them? Most of you probably wouldn't listen because people never listen to my advice anyway. So what superhero show would I make? Well, you know, the not being made, I'd love to see Hellblazer come back. I would love to see Constantine back on the TV screens. I certainly think he deserves it. If we're not going to talk about something that was already made, oh, what is something that I like that is not out there? Well, you know what? Hack Slash. We were just talking about that. I think that would make a fantastic TV show. It'd be right at home on the CW, either before or after Supernatural, and I would enjoy the shit out of that. Next up, he says, I went on that dark ride when I was 10 with my teacher at the time, and it scared me. Didn't you tell me you went on it last week? Maybe somebody else did. Well, Nick, 10 years old, I could understand that. You should try going on it now and seeing how much you scream. You know, I bet you have a really girly scream. I mean, you're a big dude, and it would totally make sense if you had a girly scream. Finally, he says, love the text from Paul Jingle. Thank you very much, Nick. I worked very hard on that. I had to conscript some slave labor in the form of my two older children to sing that. I had to find appropriate music that was license-free and could be used without me being sued. And that's tough. And then I had to pull all the Spanish lyrics out of it. So I'm getting pretty good with this editing stuff. But that's the end of the Geek Pod Blue mailbox. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. And that's going to about do it for the show this week. Now, make sure you tune in next week when our own Webcam Nick, we were just talking about, has told me he is going to be live from Georgia on the set of Walking Dead. And he told me he is going to have some personal, intimate proof about who would win in that dick measuring contest we saw on Sunday on The Walking Dead, Andrew Lincoln or Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I can't wait to see what that's all about. Till then. Tuck and roll, kids.
GeekPod Blue is a GeekPod Network production. Executive producers Paul Showens and Hugh Allen. Concept created by Paul Showens and Hugh Allen. Intro is Opportunity by Jameis Breed. Closing is Bucket by Jameis Breed. Both licensed for use by Dennis Johnston. Want to help the show? Leave a 5-star rating on iTunes. GeekPod can be reached at contribute@geekpod.com or send us a tweet at GeekPod. That's G33KPOD. You can also find GeekPod on Facebook and Instagram. G33KPOD. That's G33KPOD.